Welcome to the Brown Coat Ball Podcast. This is going to be a mighty fine shindig. Please visit www.browncoatball.com to learn more. Welcome to the second episode of the Brown Coat Ball 2011 Podcast. I'm Melissa Honig, your podcast host and the coordinator of the 2011 Brown Coat Ball. If this is the first time you've heard about the Brown Coat Ball, well, it's a weekend-long shindig just for fans of Firefly and Serenity, featuring dinner and a fancy dress-up ball on Saturday night, as inspired by the episode Shindig. The event is held in a different city each year, and in 2011, the New England Browncoats will be hosting the party in Providence, Rhode Island, the weekend of October 21st through 23rd. Please visit browncoatball.com to learn more about the event.
It sounds like the finest party I can imagine getting paid to go to.
I don't suppose you'd find it up the standards of your outings. More conversation and somewhat less petty theft and getting hit with pool cues.
I'll start us off with a brief news update. We've sold 37 tickets so far, and we're running roughly even on the division between the three daytime activity tracks, Companion, Reaver, and Shindig, with a slight preference for the Shindig track, although we still have several months to go for people to decide. The early bird pricing on tickets has ended, and ticket prices have gone up to $180, but that is expected to be the final price increase. In other news, I'm pleased to announce that we have an official photographer for the Brown Coat Ball. Paul Jones of Route 2 Photo will be with us for the ball on Saturday. I've sat for a photo session with Paul myself and was very happy with the results. Furthermore, he's got a lot of experience taking photos at events in the local belly dance community, so he knows how to photograph people in motion. He's also a geek and loves taking photos of people in costume, although he has confessed to a preference for Babylon 5 over Firefly, but we'll forgive him for that. Paul will take formal photographs of people against a backdrop and also take candid photos during the dance. After the ball is over, the photos will be available on Paul's website, and you'll be able to purchase prints and downloads of just the ones you like. If you're interested in checking out Paul's work, visit his website at www.rt2photo.com. That's rt2photo.com.
Of course, you couldn't buy an invite with a diamond the size of a testicle. I got my hands on a couple.
Next up in this podcast, I'm going to introduce you to the history behind the main attraction of our Reaver track, Providence native and famous horror writer H.P. Lovecraft.
She's dreaming. Off the charts. Scary monsters.
Howard Phillips Lovecraft was born in Providence, Rhode Island in 1890. When he was three, his father was hospitalized for psychosis, and the man died when Lovecraft was only 8 years old. Lovecraft was raised by his mother and his extended family, including his grandfather, who encouraged him to read classic stories such as The Arabian Nights, and told him his own original tales of gothic horror. Lovecraft was a sickly child himself, so reading and writing became his creative outlets. It is believed that Lovecraft also suffered from night terrors, a sleep disorder in which children have panic attacks while asleep. As an adult, he was something of a hermit and struggled with bouts of depression. It's no wonder that the stories he wrote often featured characters having terrifying dreams and fearing that they were going mad.
They worshipped, so they said, the great old ones, who lived ages before there were any men, and who came to the young world out of the sky. Those old ones were gone now, inside the earth and under the sea, but their dead bodies had told their secrets in dreams to the first men, who formed a cult which had never died. This was that cult, and the prisoners said it had always existed and always would exist, hidden in distant wastes and dark places all over the world, until the time when the great priest Cthulhu, from his dark house in the mighty city of Rylai under the waters, should rise and bring the earth again beneath his sway. Some day he would call when the stars were ready, and the secret cult would always be waiting to liberate him.
Lovecraft wrote poems and essays as well as fiction. He was also an extremely prolific letter writer. It's estimated that he wrote over 100,000 letters in his lifetime, although sadly not all of them have survived. His letters to a pulp magazine protesting some insipid love stories led to a heated debate in the magazine's letter column, leading the president of the United Amateur Press Association to invite Lovecraft to join the organization in 1914. Inspired by the encouragement of the other members of the group, Lovecraft began to publish his fiction professionally. He also exchanged letters with such authors as Robert E. Howard, creator of Conan the Barbarian, Robert Bloch, who wrote the novel Psycho, on which the Hitchcock movie was based, and many others. These authors encouraged each other, shared their ideas, and often borrowed story elements from each other, such as the famous Necronomicon, the Book of Forbidden Knowledge, first mentioned by Lovecraft, but which appears in many of his friends' stories as well. Lovecraft married in 1924 and moved to Brooklyn for a time, but the marriage failed, and in 1926 he returned to Providence. The years after his return to his hometown were his most prolific period, in which he wrote most of his well-known short stories for the leading pulp magazines, especially those featuring his most famous literary creation, Cthulhu, the hideous and terrifying high priest of the Old Ones, who first appeared in the 1928 story, The Call of Cthulhu.
The thing cannot be described. There's no language for such abysms of shrieking and immemorial lunacy. Such eldritch contradictions of all matter, force, and cosmic order. A mountain walked or stumbled. God, what wonder that across the earth a great architect went mad, and poor Wilcox raved with fever in that telepathic instant. The thing of the idols, the green, sticky spawn of the stars, had waked to claim his own. The stars were right again, and what an age-old cult had failed to do by design, a band of innocent sailors had done by accident. After victillions of years, great Cthulhu was loose again and ravening for delight.
Many of Lovecraft's stories mention real places in the city of Providence. Participants in the Reaver Track at the Brown Coat Ball will be taken on a literary walking tour of Providence with a guide from the Rhode Island Historical Society. Lovecraft's Providence stories, written between 1924 and 1935, provide the basis for this literary tour. Passages from The Case of Charles Dexter Ward, The Haunter of the Dark, The Shunned House, as well as many letters written to family and friends, offer astounding detail about his life and times. Most of the sites in Providence that Lovecraft described in the 1920s can still be seen today. Lovecraft never made much money from his writing and continued to suffer from health problems all his life. He died in Providence of cancer in 1937 when he was only 46 years old. His life may have been cut short, but his stories had a profound impact on popular culture. Artists such as Stephen King, Neil Gaiman, Mike Mignola, John Carpenter, Guillermo del Toro, and the band Metallica have cited him as an influence. Even recently, Lovecraft appeared as a character in the TV series Supernatural, and Cthulhu has turned up in several episodes of South Park. Now we invite you to join us to learn more about H.P. Lovecraft and his world at the Brown Coat Ball. We promise it won't drive you insane. Well, probably not.
This was the dream in which I saw Shoggoth for the first time, and the sight set me awake in a frenzy of screaming. That morning, the mirror definitely told me I had acquired the Innsmouth look. So far, I have not shot myself as my Uncle Douglas did. I bought an automatic and almost took the step, but certain dreams deterred me. The tense extremes of horror lessening, and I feel queerly drawn toward the unknown sea deeps instead of fearing them. I hear and do strange things in sleep, and awake with a kind of exultation instead of terror. I do not believe I need to wait for the full change, as most have waited. If I did, my father would probably shut me up at a sanitarium, as my poor little cousin is shut up. Stupendous and unheard of splendors await me below, and I shall seek them soon. Iai, Raleigh, Cthulhu, Fatagan, Iai, Iai!
Clifford Book said they was men who just reached the edge of space, saw a vasty nothingness, and went bibbledy over it.
The first two story selections you heard were from The Call of Cthulhu, and the third came from the story The Shadow Over Innsmouth. I'd like to thank my friend Andy Kirschbaum for his utterly sane and rational reading of the material. The spooky music is courtesy of user ERH from the Free Sound Project at freesound.org. The history of H.P. Lovecraft comes mostly from Wikipedia and also from the H.P. Lovecraft Archive at www.hplovecraft.com. This website has a much more detailed history of Lovecraft's life and also has an archive of his stories and letters which you can read for free.
This must be what going mad feels like.
Thank you very much for listening to the Brown Coat Ball podcast. Stay tuned to our website, Facebook page, and Twitter feed for updates. We'll see you in October. This has been the Brown Coat Ball 2011 podcast. Firefly and Serenity are the property of Mutant Enemy and Universal Studios. No infringement is intended. The theme music is Saffron's Wedding Dance by the Bedlam Bards. Please visit www.browncoatball.com to learn more. We'll see you in Rhode Island for the Brown Coat Ball.